This shir is being prepared in August 2017 in the zichus that Leah Hadassah Bas Michal Chana and Chava Bas Michal Chana should both have a refuah shleima. In shir 37, we are going to continue with part 2 of Leket Chicha and Peah, and we're going to begin by comparing them along with Teruma and Meiser. So we are comparing the Matnos Aniyim to the Matnos Kehuna. When it comes to the Matnos Kehuna, the Torah uses the word Nasan to give. When the Torah discusses Matnos Aniyim, the term used is Ta'azov Osam, you should leave them, or the Torah says that they should be left for the Ger Yosam and Almana, the stranger, orphan, and widow. In the oral law, we learn different halachos from these different terminologies. The Gemara tells us that Levi had a field in Bavel, and that there weren't any poor individuals in this specific town, and therefore Levi was unsure of what he should do with the gleanings, with the leket. So Rav Sheshes told him that he has the right to keep the leket, as the Torah says that he should leave it to the poor and not for the birds. And this is the halacha, we'll get back to this. If there aren't poor individuals to collect the leket shicha and peah, then the farmer gets to keep it for himself. Now, this is different from the matnos kehuna. If there is no kohen present, the farmer must separate truma anyway, and if it could be eaten by animals, then the farmer needs to have the truma delivered to the kohen, although the kohen will be reimbursed by the farmer for the transportation costs. And this is because it is a chil Hashem to allow truma to be eaten by animals. Another difference is that leket, shicha, and peah have no intrinsic holiness to them, but truma is kodesh. Leket, shicha, and peah are not ma'acholos asuros if one ate it. In other words, if you did not separate leket, shicha, and peah, you trespassed a lav, you did something wrong, but the grain itself is not forbidden. Truma and tevel, on the other hand, are different. And tevel, as we stated, is produce from which nothing has been removed. So, truma is kodesh. A zar, a non-kohen, may never eat truma under pain of death by heaven. If it is accidentally consumed, the non-kohen repays its value plus a fifth. A kohen and his family members may only partake of truma when they are in a state of tahara, purity. If that same kohen consumes truma when he is tamei, he is no better than a zar, and he is liable to the same punishment of death by heaven. Chal and bikurim are under this same category of truma. It is usher for a non-kohen to eat tevel under the pain of death from heaven, if it was partially tithed, so then it's a machlokas if one is liable to this punishment of death by heaven. So it's important to note the severity of the punishment reserved for these mitzvos. Kares is a very serious punishment, and there are very few dietary laws that incur death by heaven. In the past, we mentioned that the prohibition of consuming blood, eating chaylev, forbidden fats, and chametz on Pesach incur kares, and we explained that infringing on these is considered the denial of a fundamental Jewish concept of life. Turning to truma, the kohen may eat, since he is the representative of the mikdash and the Torah which resides in the mikdash. A non-kohen who eats from his crop without separating truma, which is the symbol of our concern for the spiritual aim of life, or a non-kohen who eats truma, shows that he denies the fundamental truth that all earthly goods and enjoyments, all of life, have no meaning unless they are considered as the means to uphold Torah and to further recognize God and his moral law in the world. To eat truma or tevel profanes the mikdash, and It's a rejection of our divinely ordained task. A Kohen who eats Truma, when he's not allowed to, he denies the fundamental importance of moral freedom for every human endeavor, since Truma is a symbolic expression of the denial of moral freedom in man. The rule of not eating from Tevel applies to both non-Kohanim and to Kohanim. The reason that the Kohen must separate Truma and Meiser, even though he eats the Truma, so it might be to demonstrate that the Kohen, the representative of the Torah, always remains the servant of the Torah and subordinate to it as much as every non-Kohen. Let's now look into how Leket, Shicha, and Peah have been observed throughout time. The Torah tells us in Vayikra in 19:9, when you reap the harvest of your land, and the Yerushalmi concludes, based on this, that Leket, Shicha, and Peah only apply in Eretz Yisrael. However, the Bavli states that Peah rabbinically applies outside of Eretz Yisrael, and the Rambam adds that Leket, Shicha, Peret, and Obolos also apply rabbinically outside of Eretz Yisrael, but if there are no poor people around, anyone can partake of these gifts, as they do not need to be left in the field. So again, this is unlike Truma, which has inherent Kiddusha. Tur quotes this Rambam, and he adds that we do not keep these laws today, since we live in locations that are majority non-Jewish, and the gifts are supposed to be specifically for Jewish people. Beis Yosef, commenting on the Tur, says that the Jewish poor have given up their claim on these gifts, and this is another reason why we do not follow these laws today. It is also possible, he adds, that these halachos may not be meant for lands far away from Eretz Yisrael, but only applicable to nearby countries. And now in Shulchan Aruch, he writes that if there are no Jewish poor, there is no need to leave Leket, Shicha, and Peah in the fields. And Rama repeats the words of the Torah, that we do not leave these gifts to anyone but the Jewish people, and therefore we do not observe these halachos today. The question becomes, what does the Torah mean by this exactly? Does he mean that we are only exempt outside of Eretz Yisrael, where these mitzvos are rabbinic in nature, or does the exemption also apply in Israel itself? So the opinion that the exemption applies even in Eretz Yisrael is that of the Shach, and the Chassam Sofer argues and says these mitzvos do apply in Eretz Yisrael today. Why is it that the Rambam states that we are obligated in these commandments, if there are poor people, but the Tur and those after him give reasons that we are not bound to these mitzvos, mainly since we live among the non-Jewish population? So why do we see this difference? So Shulchan Aruch HaAsid explains as follows. He says, Jews in Europe during the Rambam's time were largely involved in agriculture, and therefore it was practically important to leave these gifts in the fields. Furthermore, farmers do not always have cash available to themselves to give charity, and the Jews of Europe were able to meet their tzedakah obligations through these agricultural gifts. Now, I'll be honest, I'm not really sure how that works, because Leket, Shicha, and Peah, as far as I understand it, are not tzedakah. These are three separate mitzvah requirements that must be fulfilled. Tzedakah is an extra requirement that needs to be filled, so I'm not really sure how that works. But continuing, during the Tur's time and later, Jews were not allowed to own property. That was just based on the government. They ceased being involved in agriculture and focused more on varying trades, and therefore it was not practical to have them leave harvest gifts to the poor, and tzedakah was met with monetary contributions. So I just want to say that this is all theory, and I don't fully understand it, but this is what he writes in Shulchan Aruch HaAsid. As far as Israel is concerned, people stopped keeping these laws since land was in the hands of non-Jewish people, who made up most of the population. Now, it's certainly not due to the fact that there weren't any poor, because we know historically the Jewish people in Israel, until pretty recently, were often very poor. It seems that today, currently in Israel, these arguments do not apply anymore. The land is in Jewish hands, with a majority of Jewish people, and there are poor individuals, and therefore we would think that Leket, Shicha, and Peah really should apply today. And when Diane Grunfeld wrote this book, he writes as follows. Here's an exact quote. As far as the present writer is aware, these laws are not observed in the state of Israel, not even by the religious settlements. Perhaps the reason for that non-observance is that the poor in modern Israel would not bother to collect the harvest gifts from the fields, in which case the respective laws would not apply, as pointed out before. Now, this was written in 1972, so it's been many years since this was written, and it seems that, based on what I've been able to find out from the OU, that the current practice in Israel today is exactly the same. Lekat Shicha and Peya are not performed today, and probably due either to this reason, that the poor wouldn't collect them, and they would sit in the field, the birds would come and eat them, and that's not the purpose of Lekat Shicha and Peya. Let's now take a look at some of the ideas behind these mitzvos, which will clearly revolve around the Torah's idea of social responsibility. The very first Mishnah in Peya says that there are a list of mitzvos that on a biblical level have no minimum amount, and these include Peya, Bikurim will be our next mitzvah, the Karban Re'iyah, and that's for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, you bring a Karban with you when you are Ola Regal, Tzedakah, and Torah learning. The Mishnah continues, the following items one benefits from in this world through performing the mitzvah and reaps reward for them in the next world as well. So this includes honoring one's parents, tzedakah, attending the Beis Medrash morning and evening, hospitality, visiting the sick, providing a dowry for a wedding, partaking in escorting the dead, devotion to prayer, making peace between people, and the Mishnah ends by saying that the study of Torah is equivalent to all of these. So we see from here that Peah is mixed in with the most sublime spiritual blessings that we have. I'm going to read the rest of the chapter inside. Our sages lay great stress on the laws referring to the harvest gifts and on the blessing promised by God to those who give them. They state that he who leaves the gleanings and the forgotten sheaf in his field and does not reap the corner so that the poor can collect them is regarded as though he had built the temple and offered the prescribed sacrifices therein. The Talmud, speaking of the blessings of God for those who conscientiously observe the laws of the harvest gifts, as well as those of the tithes, refers to the challenge of the prophet Malachi, bring all the tithes to the treasury so that there will be food in my house. Please test me on this, says the God of hosts. There is no way that I will not open up the floodgates of the heavens for you and pour down uncontainable blessings upon you. Rabbi Yochanan explains the injunction in the Torah of aser to aser, you should surely tithe, by using a play on words in Hebrew, two words that sound the same. So the first word is aser, which means to give tithes, and he uses the word te'asher with it, which means to be rich. So when you put them together, you get aser bishvil shetis asher. You should give tithes in order that you may become enriched. In the course of that Talmudic passage, which is of special interest for our subject, Rabbi Yochanan also quotes the challenge of the prophet Malachi, which we have just quoted in connection with the tithes and harvest gifts. Similarly, Rabbi Akiva states in Pirkei Avos that tithes are a fence to riches. In the ordinary course of events, one would think that gifts to the poor, like harvest gifts and the tithes, diminish wealth. However, the Torah and our sages assure us this is not so, for God rewards the giver by blessing him with more wealth, so that in turn he is able to give more. The Midrash quotes many interesting anecdotes in this connection from practical life, which are meant to prove the assurance given by the Torah and our sages. From the legal provisions referring to the harvest gifts, it seems clear that Lekat Shicha and Peah were not meant as substitutes for the general care of the poor. Only Peah was a gift, which the poor could be certain of receiving, and as far as the Torah law is concerned, no minimum amount for this gift is prescribed. Leket, as well as Shikha, depended on the chance that ears of corn were dropped and a sheaf forgotten. On the other hand, leket, shicha, and peah were certainly more than token gifts. It is, for instance, estimated that leket, the ears of corn that usually fall at the time of reaping, amounts to 1/45th part of the grain harvest. Nevertheless, it seems that the harvest gifts were mainly to be considered as charitable deeds with a special educational purpose in the sphere of social morality. Their main aim was to remind the Israelite of his duty towards his less fortunate brethren. Thus, the law of Peah teaches us that the land and its products are not only for the benefit of the owner, but also for that of the poor. Leket reminds us that our gainful occupation should not be directed to selfish aims only, but that we should always share the fruit of our labor with the needy. Shicha, which refers to a sheaf which has escaped our mind, warns us that our thoughts of acquisition and our economic drive should not remain self-centered. The Mishnah in Peah concludes with the Jewish concept of charity, tzedakah, and the rules and regulations to which it is subjected. Tzedakah, as the Torah speaks of it, is not charity as most people conceive of that term, but it is a legal claim of the poor on the rich. It is enforceable by the Jewish law courts via the administration of Jewish communities. This is not regarded as an imposition on the rich, because in the Jewish view, repeatedly stressed by our sages, he who gives to the poor and needy ultimately benefits more than the recipient of his gifts. This holds good not only psychologically, but from the standpoint of character training, but as we have pointed out before, also economically. On the other hand, only he who is really in need of charity should accept gifts either from private persons or avail himself of the charitable institutions of the community. He who pretends to be poor and is not, our sages say, will eventually become poor. Rambam, in his Yad HaChazakah, follows the example of the Mishnah and concludes the section of gifts to the poor, which includes the harvest gifts, with a general exposition on the virtue of charity, tzedakah, in the Jewish philosophy of life. It may be of interest to quote here a few passages of that exposition. So we are now going to quote from the Rambam, and this is through Diane Grunfeld's translation. There has never been a community, kehila, in Israel, which has had no special organization set up in order to help the poor. It is our duty to be more conscientious with the mitzvah, commandment of tzedakah, charity, than with all other mitzvos. For tzedakah is a characteristic feature of anyone who is a descendant of our father Avraham, as it is written, "For I have known him, to the end that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness, tzedakah, and justice," etc. The throne of Yisrael is established and true religion upheld only by righteousness, tzedakah, for it is said, "In righteousness, tzedakah, shall you be established." Yisrael will only be redeemed by tzedakah, for it says, "Tzion will be redeemed with justice, and they that return of her with righteousness, tzedakah." No one has ever become poor by practicing tzedakah, and nothing evil and no damage to anyone have ever resulted from tzedakah, for it says, "And the effect of tzedakah is peace." Anyone who shows mercy to the poor can be sure that mercy is shown to him by the Almighty. Any Jew who is cruel to the poor and refuses to support them casts, by his own attitude, a doubt as to whether he is really descendant from our father Avraham. Be careful with the poor, for God hears their cry, as it says, "You hear the cry of the poor." A special covenant exists between the poor and his Father in heaven, for it is written, "When he cries to me, I shall hear him, for I am merciful." He who averts his eyes from tzedakah is called a wicked man. Anyone who hurts the feelings of the poor by the manner he gives charity, tzedakah, violates his own good deed, even if he has given the greatest sum of money. Rather, it is our duty to give to the poor with a friendly mien, and to show him our personal sympathy and concern with his plight. Okay, so that concludes the section from Rambam, and he continues by writing, "These words of the great Jewish codifier are but a 12th century echo of the ancient noble utterance of Eov. This comes from 31:16. So Eov is describing here how he has always been charitable. He's always given tzedakah. Never did I withhold the needs of the destitute, nor did I let a widow's eyes long in vain, nor did I eat my bread in solitude so that an orphan could not eat from it. For it raised me since my youth as if it were a father, and I have practiced it from my mother's womb. So clearly he's referring to tzedakah here. Did I ever see a forlorn person without a garment? Or was there ever a destitute person without clothing whose loins would not bless me, meaning I gave him clothing, who would not warm himself by the shearings of my sheep? Okay, so like we said, it is the aim of the dietary laws connected with plants and vegetables to create within us these spiritual qualities that are known in Jewish moral philosophy as our midos, to cultivate these midos and spiritual qualities. And certainly tzedakah and human kindness really rank at the top of this. So this concludes Shir 37, and next time we will discuss the mitzvah of Bikurim.